It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And again, we gave you the number, so you're welcome to call in. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
Last week, we were talking about some timing issues there, too, on statute of limitations. What are we talking about today?
We talked about various statute of limitations, negligence, contract, mechanics and materialman's liens. And just wanted to, you know, get out there how important it is for people to pay attention to, you know, their claim if they do have one, and make sure their claim doesn't get old, because there are various statutes of limitations that will cut off any rights in a claim if you wait too long. So anyone who wants to go back and listen to the program from last week can kind of get just an overview of some of the most common statute of limitations that we deal with.
Ones we're most likely to run into.
That's right. Negligence, contract. Sometimes, you know, fraud, we run into that. And then the unfair and deceptive trade practices would be one as well. And the mechanics and materialman's liens, I think, off the top of my head, are the ones we went over last week.
Okay.
Today, you know, we're going to talk about if we're at a point where we've dealt with the statute of limitations and we don't have an issue there, and maybe we find ourselves, you know, in some litigation, or if we're dealing with an estate, Cecil's going to talk more about the estate proceeding and timing there. But then we have other deadlines and timelines and things we have to deal with.
It
just seems like we just always are on a deadline timeline, because your rights are so very fixed in the world of the law by time.
Well, basically every motion has a response timing issue, right?
That's right. That's right. And basically, you know, just to start from the beginning, you know, when we're talking about in the litigation context, the lawsuit begins when a complaint is filed, and a summons is issued, and then there's service.
Right.
And that term service is a very important term in the law. And basically what that means is that the party being served, whether it's a, you know, defendant in a lawsuit or, you know, whatever it might be, has actually received notice in the law of what's being pled against them. And now that notice and service can be achieved, you know, not really by actual notice. It can be in other ways. Like, it could be personal service where it's actually served upon the person.
Somebody's handed it to
them.
That's
right.
We see it on TV all the time.
That's right. That's like typically done, not necessarily by a process server, although it can be done that way. It's normally done by the sheriff.
By deputy, yeah.
That's right. Okay. Sheriff's department. Next, service by mail. This one gets a little bit tricky sometimes, because, you know, you can serve someone by, mailing the document to them, at their place of work.
Right.
Or at their residence, and it has to be, you know, signed for. And we need to make sure that we get those things. I mean, you know, you've got to get them. I'm kind of pausing here a little bit, because I do have a case in my office right now that I can't talk about too much, but there's a huge issue whether service was achieved.
Yeah, I can imagine somebody could sign for it, but it might not be the person that it's meant for.
Yeah,
that's right.
And for instance, an adult-looking child, you know, a 17-year-old that's out there, a son that looks like he's 24. Those are out there, by the way.
Yes, that's right.
You know, or a daughter, the same. They take mom or dad's or uncle or aunt's, you know, official mail, and then unfortunately, you know, in the hubbub of life, it doesn't quite get given to the person that it was intended to. This is a real problem.
Oh, we have in my family, I'm Ben, but I have a Ben Jr.,
Right.
Things get mixed up.
Correct. So, you know, our listeners are well advised that, you know, first of all, if you receive any kind of official notice, certified mailings, registered mailings, certainly service by a deputy of a law arm, of a law enforcement agency, then, you know, it really is time to kind of pause and get some legal advice on those things. No question about it. But Wes is absolutely correct. These deadlines exist. Time frames, if you will, all throughout what we lawyers do. And of course, lawyers are known to keep what is known as a tickler system, mm-hmm. which is a deadline system in our computers that tell it, that make us aware of these deadlines. Mm-hmm. Now, in the estate arena, the most common deadline that we confront early on is the requirement that you officially notice the creditors of the estate 4 consecutive weeks in the official, if you will, newspaper mm-hmm. of the county and or counties where the decedent
resided.
And of course, once these notices are placed in the public notices of the mm-hmm. official newspaper for 4 consecutive weeks, they set forward each of them a 3-month deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's during that 3 months and not beyond the date of the 3 months that the creditors have to present their claims.
Okay.
And so this is a very important deadline in the estate arena. The other deadline, of course, and this is one of the reasons why people say, well, why can't I open up the estate, next week and within 2 or 3 weeks thereafter, after I change the accounts over,
right.
Just close the estate. Well, that's difficult to do, if not impossible to do, because of the fact that, we do need to run the statute mm-hmm. for at least 3 months. The other deadlines in the estate arena, of course, are tax deadlines. Many times people do mm-hmm. need to file an estate tax return or a fiduciary tax return, and those are not even due until 9 months post death. And so, again, in the estate arena, we're looking at the 3-month deadline and then the 9-month deadline and then the year. Those are usually the threshold deadlines for the first year. And then after the year, if it goes that far, then it would kind of refer to, an annual mm-hmm. at that point.
Right, right. Back on the litigation side, once you have served, and you mentioned, I guess there's also service by publication.
Yeah, exactly. That was the next one.
Yeah.
You try the first ones, the personal service, and then service by mail, and then in the event you cannot achieve service by those attempts, then you can serve by publication. So, you got to pay attention to those notices in the newspaper because mm-hmm. that, would be good service.
Now, does the Sheriff's Department have a time limit too, about when they can actually have to, if that service by in person?
Or? Well, we want them to act as quickly as possible. Obviously, they're very busy, and
mm-hmm, right.
here our local sheriff's departments do an excellent job in processing all documents, legal documents, which is a big part of
yeah,
what they do, by
yeah,
the
no,
way.
No, it's amazing. They can get it done.
Yeah, frankly. We're very fortunate to have great departments around here. But as far as the timing goes, it's not necessarily timing as it relates to just, them operating. It's the timing of the summons itself.
Mm-hmm.
The summons only has a certain period of time for which it's good.
Oh, okay.
And then you have
right.
to reissue a summons or get what's called an A&P, alias in pluris summons, through the court to extend the time of that summons. Mm-hmm. So it's
so it has a
little bit
of a
technical,
time
but we're
too.
Normally looking at about a 90-day period of time
mm-hmm.
With some variations for which the life of a summons is good. So, yeah, that's the period okay. of time that we're looking for that service.
And then another clock starts.
That's right. And then once we've achieved service, you'll see there on the summons a civil action has been filed against you. And this is all state court, by the way, is what mm-hmm. we're talking about here.
Right.
We can talk about federal court on another program, but the timing is pretty much the same mm-hmm. with some shorter time frames in federal court, but today we're just talking about state court. So the summons indicates on the front of the yellow sheet of paper, basically,
right.
a civil action has been filed against you. You need to, file a response within 30 days. Well, there you go. There's mm-hmm. the first time frame. And what happens after that 30-day period of time after the date of service is that the plaintiff who has filed the action against you may then seek an entry of default from the clerk of court. And an entry of default basically is you go to the clerk, you make an application for default. The clerk looks at the court file and sees, okay, this was served on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are on February 10th. It's been 39 or 40 days. It's been more than 30 days. There's no extension of time in this file. So I will, yes, stamp this as an entry of default. I will enter this. It's almost like a rubber stamp type situation because it's just based on the timing. Now, what's the effect of that? The effect of that is that once an entry of default has been made, then you have admitted as the defendant all of the allegations in the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's an allegation of some certain in that complaint, such as the plaintiff is alleging I'm entitled to a judgment for $50,000, then guess what?
Yeah,
then the clerk can then enter what's called a default judgment, which mm-hmm. is a judgment against you for the amount that's pled.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, Ben, we run into situations where there is an excusable situation. Where, you know, I gave it to the lawyer, but the lawyer didn't respond.
Right.
That could be one.
Right.
I was, out of town. I was deployed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I
very
was,
valid one, I would think.
Publication was, service was through publication and I didn't see that. I'm sorry I didn't see it, but they
yeah.
tried to serve me apparently, but I was, you know, out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we're acting within a reasonable amount of time,
mm-hmm.
then you can make application to the court to have the entry of default set aside. It's fairly common if you have a good excuse mm-hmm. for an entry of default to be set aside. But there are certainly situations where the court will just not allow that and not do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we stay away from that because the effect of that entry of default is so dire to the case. You know, we can't rely upon our hopes that the court might set that aside.
Right.
So.
Right. But the court has a lot of discretion to set that aside.
The court does have a lot of discretion, and that decision is not reviewable on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a discretionary issue
mm-hmm.
as to whether an entry of default will be set aside.
You know, obviously, Ben, you know, facts and circumstances reviewed by, you know, a trial court judge at that time are going to be pretty decisive.
Right.
Hovering around all of this, and we haven't quite said it, is, of course, the issue of due process and constitutionality.
Sure.
Of you know, the fact that, you know, there should not be a cause of action to ensue against you or against an estate or against a corporation without that corporation, estate, or person having knowledge.
Okay. And more to come on that in just a moment here with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law on the web at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. 10 minutes before the hour here with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. And we're talking about deadlines out there. And it just seems, Wes, that every time you file a piece of paper, there's a deadline with it. And if you want to amend that, then it sets off another deadline, right?
There's no question about that, Ben. You know, these deadlines in the law are so, you know, very vital, so mm-hmm. very important.
Yeah, and, you know, they're frustrating to us. I mean, who's sitting out there who are trying to litigate something or want to get an answer, you know.
Right.
We get frustrated by that.
That's right.
You guys recognize that. We have to be patient
and realize that, you know, all the cases that we're handling they're just moving at their own pace.
Mm-hmm.
But it is critical, as Cecil said, to have this tickler system or the, you know, a computer program basically to keep up with all the deadlines because if you're a busy attorney, you're never going to keep up with all the deadlines,
mm-hmm.
you know, just by writing them down on a piece
That's
of
right.
paper.
It
doesn't work that way. But nevertheless, you know, we were talking about the 30-day deadline to answer the complaint
mm-hmm.
and the effect of that, the entry of default and a default judgment. So we see how very important it is to respond within that 30-day period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the court will give an extra 30 days as long as you ask for that within the first 30 days.
Right.
So that's just called a motion for extension of time. Those are routinely granted. There's not really any standard as far as a burden of proof. They just give you an extra 30 days.
If a person doesn't have an attorney and they want to engage an attorney at that time, that's often going to be the case.
That's right. And, you know, if folks are out there and they do want to get an attorney and they're on the 28th day, but they can't get an appointment with an attorney in the next 2 days. So they want to get that extension of time. They can certainly just write a letter to the clerk. I asked for an extension of time to answer the complaint
mm-hmm.
and type up a little, you know, simple order that says, mm-hmm. you know, the extension of time is granted for 30 days and have the clerk sign it. And that just gives you another 30 days so you can go meet your attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that, the best scenario would be get an attorney within the first 30 days. But if you find yourself, you know, with your back against the wall, then the clerk can work with you with regard to, you know, those type circumstances.
Because your answers are on the record. I mean, those are, those answers are, you're held accountable for those.
No question about that. You know, it's not a good idea if you're planning on getting legal counsel to go ahead and file your answer as to what you think your responses would be in the complaint and then get legal counsel later. Because, you know, these answers, not only if you don't answer and we miss the 30 days, not only is that a very important and potentially dire situation in your case, if you answer incorrectly or in a way that you just don't understand the impact of how you're answering, that can have an equally, you know, damning effect to your case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to get good, competent legal counsel in litigation mm-hmm. because there's just so many minefields.
You're right.
And we're just talking about timing today, but I mean, That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, it is indeed. But if you don't hit the timing issue, everything else pretty much stops.
That's right.
So we got to answer that too. And more of those answers coming up in a moment. If you want to contact the folks at Harvell and Collins, it's 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com. Back talking about timing issues here with Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. And, you know, once you've in that litigation process, you start looking for some of the information. That's the discovery process.
Right. We've talked about that on the program before. You know, once the civil action has been filed or we're in court, we're moving forward with the case, then in most cases we're serving discovery, requests for production of documents, requests for admissions, and interrogatories. These are just different methods by which we get written questions answered in discovery. And there's a whole set of guidelines and restrictions with regard to timing on that as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, once we serve our discovery, here we are on again, a 30-day clock in order to respond to those or the other side to respond to those. And, again, we're entitled to a pretty simple request for an additional 30 days. So we're normally looking at a 60-day period of time if there's legal counsel on the other side of the case.
Mm-hmm.
But the effect of, you know, not answering these, really you put the interrogatories and requests for production of documents in one category and the request for admissions in another. Because if you don't answer the interrogatories or requests for production of documents, then what happens is, you know, you file a motion to compel, you go to court, you can get your attorney's fees for the other party not responding or responding not completely. But if we look at the request for admissions, if you fail to respond to those, that's deemed an admission for each one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just like not answering, you know, the complaint itself. So, you know, failure to answer the request for admissions has a much more significant impact on the case than do the interrogatories and requests for production of documents, because it's deemed. It's a deemed admission.
Right.
You know, you've admitted whatever I've asked you, you know, in the particular discovery request. So again, we're dealing with a 30-day period of time there with a 30-day extension if requested and granted by the clerk. So a 60-day, you know, period of time with regard to that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we deal with motions. We've talked about motions being, motions for summary judgment, 12B6 motion, which will be a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. You know, multiple different motions that we deal with in court. If we're talking about a non-dispositive motion, like a motion to compel discovery or a motion that's not going to dispose of the case, we have to give a 5-day notice before the hearing. Okay? You can't just show up in court and say, I want this to be heard. That's all due process.
Yeah.
And if you serve by mail, you have to give an additional 3 days. Mm-hmm. So that's the mailbox rule. So that's really an 8-day period of time. But you can serve by fax with that. So you can get, you don't really have to worry about that 3 days. but it's the 5 days there with a non-dispositive type motion.
Yeah, all of these things. Again, so many different deadlines, and I'm amazed that you even know all of these right off the top of your head, but because we deal with them, Cecil, and in many other areas too.
I mean, well, you do. The new offer to purchase and contract, uniform offer to purchase and contract for real estate closings now is just riddled with all sorts of time frames.
The due diligence
the
period.
Due diligence
We've talked
period.
About that a lot here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, of course, the famous concept of time is of the essence mm-hmm. in a real estate contract, that, in effect, time is not of the essence. Time is a flexible thing in a real estate contract, generally, unless the contract specifically says that time is of the essence, mm-hmm. which is not what we lawyers like to see. That's a difficult provision
right.
to in this day and age when you've got so many factors coming into play in a real estate closing. It's hard to pin down a particular day. Suppose mm-hmm. the funds don't get wired that day. But, yes, there are these deadlines in real estate closings and in the contracts. Also in the corporate arena, buy-sell agreements, cross-purchase agreements, life insurance agreements, all of these usually have time frames.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wes and I find ourselves constantly being, a telephone call. Well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Well, you need to let us look at the contract. Is mm-hmm. there something in writing? Because so many times, if there is a written document, it is going to have some sort of time
right,
limitation.
Right.
And certain conditions exist if you give notice within 30 days. Other conditions exist if it's beyond the 30-day period,
mm-hmm.
things of that nature.
And even with all of these things, even when rulings are made, Wes, then there's the appeal times. I mean, the times
that's
you
right.
have to come back and say, no, yeah. that's not right.
That's right. And let me pick up on one more thing I didn't state. We were talking about motions.
Mm-hmm.
Non-dispositive 5 days, and then dispositive motions, like the big motions, motion for summary judgment, motion
right.
to dismiss, 10 days. So you have to give a little bit more time on that. Okay, but yes, even after the case is over, we have a period of time where a motion for JNOV can be made, judgment notwithstanding the verdict. Okay?
Okay.
There's a period of time with regard to that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a 30-day period of time in which you can file a notice of appeal.
Mm-hmm.
If you miss that, then you're done on that.
Right.
Then if you're proceeding with an appeal, then there's a 14-day period of time in which you have to have a arrangement with the transcriptionist.
I'm just imagining this huge flow chart somewhere somewhere in the cloud has a flow chart of all these things. If you want to find out and get it all straightened out, call on the folks at Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, 252-726-905.